This conference is being recorded.
Welcome, everybody. This is Peter Ayers. Today, I'm excited to introduce our presenter, Harry Tucker. Harry has a degree in computer science from College of North America and a diploma in theology and ministry from Queens College. He's a corporate and business coach focusing on entrepreneur strategy and guidance, team enablement, leadership incubation, and personal mentoring. He helps leaders to create a life on purpose, one that brings strategy, clarity, results, and balance back to their professional and personal lives. Harry's topic for today is servant leadership and authenticity. In a passion-filled, interactive sharing, we'll explore the reasons why authentic servant leaderships are needed more than ever personally and professionally, and the key ways to move ourselves toward a servant leadership model. We'll also discuss ways of overcoming the most common obstacles to servant leadership. Harry, just what is servant leadership and why is it important for all of us?
Well, it's a great question, Peter, and it's the notion of servant leadership is often misunderstood. Because we often think of leaders as people who exercise authority over or power over someone, and we often think of servants as people who are having authority or power exercised over them. And so the notion of servant leadership confuses some people. In fact, what a servant leader is someone who gives their gifts of leadership, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, to serve the greater good. Now, the greater good can be many things. It can be the greater good of humanity if it's a very broad-scale type of thing that they're a leader in. It could be the greater good of a project, or it could be for the greater good of people that the leaders influence. And so it's a great question. The challenge in today's world, like I said, is people tend to look at leaders as the holder and keeper and exerciser of authority. A lot of the great minds of today, business minds, have kind of turned the leadership definition on its head. And people like Ken Blanchard, Owen Phelps, John Maxwell, and others talk about leadership as the art of influence. So it's not to drag you along in the direction that I think you need to go in, but to perhaps provide or enable people through my influence to achieve some specific purpose. And so, so when you think of a servant as one who serves the needs of others, a servant leader is one who, through their vision, through their passion, through their influence, is able to enable a team to serve the needs of others, and then the leader, the servant leader, in order to accomplish that, serves the organization or the team that they lead. And so I'm glad you asked that question. A lot of people, when I talk about servant leadership, it kind of turns them inside out, because we often think of leaders, for example, like the President of the United States, for example, as a man with a lot of authority, a lot of pressure, but he in himself is a man who serves the needs of the people. So he would be an example of a servant leader. The other thing that's important to keep in mind with servant leadership is that when you're a servant leader, This is not martyrdom. You're not a doormat. Some people take the definition of servant too far the other way, and they kind of think that servant leaders are, in fact, a bunch of wimps that are easily rolled over by someone else. And, in fact, it's not that at all. It's just that a servant leader has an extremely strong desire to empower people and to serve people, and through serving them, empower them to achieve the objectives that they've set out to accomplish. It's kind of interesting in today's world. Leaders today are an interesting breed. In many circles, political circles tend to be the one that stands out. We find that leaders spend more time looking like leaders than being leaders. And it's kind of interesting. It's not really their fault. You know, leaders spend more time trying to give people what they want and not what people need. And the reasons for that are many. I mean, basically, when it comes time to selecting leaders, we tend to create this definition of the perfect leader. And there's probably no human being alive on the planet that can answer to that definition of what is a perfect leader. But because we look for perfect leaders, a lot of people in leadership capacity have discovered that probably the only way to play the game is to project themselves other than that which they are. And that creates all kinds of challenges. And it explains why a lot of leaders today tend to run into interesting conflicts. A lot of times a leader will exhibit a certain behavior that is contrary to what we expected of that leader and of the persona that leader projected. So I think, for example, a couple of weeks ago we had an example where a gentleman in the California legislature didn't realize he had a hot mic and was making some comments about some personal love interest that he had. And it wasn't his wife he was referring to. But this person internally within the California legislature had been pegged as the keeper of family values. And it's kind of interesting. He needed, in order to get where he needed to get, he projected a particular persona because that's what people wanted to see. And so he projected that persona, but it wasn't that which he really was. It had created an interesting internal structural tension for him. So a servant leader can avoid getting caught up in the structural tension in ways that we'll talk about in just a moment. The great challenge, when you're a servant leader, there are a number of characteristics, a couple of them being humility, for example, and others that we'll talk about. But if you don't embrace the servant leadership model, it can create some really interesting problems. For example, to get back to folks that project that which or other project some persona other than that which they are, think about examples where people need to promote a facade. They need to promote a number of personal attributes. And they probably exaggerate. And they exaggerate because we set a certain expectation. And so in order to meet that expectation, they promote themselves at a level greater than that which they may be. The problem with that is at some point, if it's really beyond that which you are, then after a while you start inflating yourself or your ego with a little pride. You get a little too proud because you eventually start believing your own story. And so you get your ego all inflated. But then what happens is you kind of move to a different phase then. And as you grow in stature, you grow in the public eye, or you grow within the eye of your teams, your organization, then you start to become, on some subconscious level, afraid. And you become afraid because you realize that I have projected a persona other than that which I am. And while it's really good and I hope I can keep it going, sooner or later somebody may discover me. And they may discover that I'm something other than that which I've claimed. And the great challenge with that is if you act from the standpoint of fear, then you're always acting from a compromised position. And you know it limits the chances that you will take. It puts you in a precarious position if somebody else decides that they don't want you in that position anymore because they will look for ways to take you out. So you're constantly looking behind you to see if someone is going to try to remove you from that position of leadership. Now, a servant leader on the other hand, is different. A servant leader recognizes his or her place and his or her authentic contribution in a larger collaborative space. And with that as well, the notion of servant in servant leadership suggests humility as well. So a humble person will not intentionally overinflate who they are, any particular or personal attributes about themselves. They are who they are. They wear their passion on their sleeve. They do not hide, for example, what their vision is. They don't hide their execution models. And we'll talk about execution models in just a moment. And so when a servant leader is not presenting a persona other than that which they are, when they're presenting their true, authentic self, that gives them a lot less to worry about on the periphery, meaning they can actually focus on the tasks at hand, and they don't have to get sidetracked or derailed by fighting this fight, trying to maintain this false facade. And so this allows the servant leader to replace fear that some leaders have with confidence. Now, confidence is an interesting thing. You know, a lot of people, if you name a particular person, and I'll pick Donald Trump for an example. Some people will tell you he's confident, and some people will tell you he's arrogant. And it's the same person, but just different perspectives. And the real judge of a servant leader, when it's difficult to tell whether it's confidence or arrogance, is the level of humility that the servant leader exhibits. And there are some great leaders out there who exhibit phenomenal humility. And so while they're very good at what they do, and you can see the confidence in their own abilities, when you speak to them or read their works or have an opportunity to listen to them, the humility that they exhibit is just a mind-blowing thing to witness. I'll give an example. I've had some opportunity over the last couple of years to work with Ken Blanchard. And when you read Ken Blanchard's material, if anyone has a reason to be overconfident, it would be Ken Blanchard. I mean, his material is fantastic. He's highly respected around the world. He has spoken to presidents and other leaders. And yet, if you have an opportunity to meet Ken Blanchard, he is probably the most humble man in the room. And so, you know, Ken Blanchard is an example of a true servant leader. Now, what's interesting about servant leaders is that servant leaders have a deep sense of purpose. And so servant leaders, you know, are very passionate about their purpose. And so when you run into a servant leader, the passion for whatever purpose they serve runs deep. Now, that's not to say that they're all jumping up and down and doing cartwheels in the hallways, but a servant leader, you know, whether they exhibit their passion outwardly or whether they exhibit it in other ways through their focus and through how they persevere, you know, the true servant leader is passionate about, you know, the purpose that they serve, the purpose that the team that they lead serves, and how they can bring that together. So they're very passionate about projecting a vision, for example. So they, you know, many leaders today will say, I'm going to do this, and they lay out a list of tasks, and if you're a team member, that servant leader, then you're either assigned something or you can pick something or what have you. But there's no opportunity to buy into what you're witnessing. You're either given something to do or you take something. A servant leader is different. A servant leader, once tasked with something, will articulate a vision. And the servant leader will not only articulate the vision, but they will invite the rest of the team to participate in the crafting of the vision. So that once the entire team has had an opportunity to contribute to the vision, then there's buy-in within the team. And then the servant leader will use that vision as the rally point around which all the other team members will have an opportunity to direct their own passion, purpose, and talents. So the servant leader is not projecting his or her vision. They're projecting basically the collective vision. But once the collective vision has been established, then the servant leader will champion that vision above all else. So servant leadership, you know, a servant leader, like I said, is passionate about the vision, and they're passionate about how each one of us plugs into that vision. Because the servant leader knows that the optimal team is one where everybody has an opportunity to contribute and to grow and to stretch. Now, and we'll talk in a few minutes, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but let's come back for a moment to, you know, why does it matter if we even bother to embrace a servant leader model? And I think all of us can look at examples in our lifetime. The last couple of years have been really rich in examples of what happens when leadership goes wrong. And, you know, I think of servant leaders and what I like to refer to as authentic leaders. And if you look at what went wrong, I mean, we all remember the Enron case. We all have our opinions on what happened a year ago when the financial markets collapsed. You know, a lot of people said we were caught by surprise, and yet it came out that a lot of people were actually in the know. So, you know, they projected one type of leadership, that everything was great and groovy and all under control, and yet we discover later that they weren't serving the interests of the people at large. They were serving perhaps a personal interest. So they weren't a true servant leader. They were the classic leader, which uses power and authority. And sometimes people use power and authority for good, and sometimes they don't. And we've had a number of examples. Like I said, our recent history is rich with examples. We've had an example in Atlantic Canada within the last week where the local bishop who was in charge of, or let me back up a little bit. About 20 years ago, there was a huge scandal within the clergy of the Roman Catholic Church in Atlantic Canada, and it later followed with scandal in Boston and other places. And there was a bishop in Atlantic Canada who was appointed as the head of the negotiation team in Atlantic Canada, and he recently concluded his negotiation, and cash awards were paid out to a number of victims of the scandals from many years ago. And this bishop was constantly giving speeches about the need to protect children, and yet entering the country this week, he was arrested and charged with importing and distributing child pornography. And it turned out that he's been doing this for 25 years or more. So you think of leadership, and he had the title, he had the power. But if you think of servant leadership, that which is using your influence to serve others for their greater purpose, or if you think of authentic leadership, which is, you know, I say we are this, and I can prove that I am that also. You know, we can all find examples of where it goes wrong. Now, we can all find examples of where it goes well or where it goes properly as well. And I point back to Ken Blanchard and folks like that and other leaders, some politicians as well, who are what they claim to be. But I will tell you that those leaders who are what they claim to be endure a lot of stress to be authentic, because they live in a world that would rather they not be authentic for a number of reasons. So think about as well what the media promotes. I mean, the media rarely promotes a good, authentic servant leader and highlights them and runs a profile, et cetera, et cetera. But if someone actually fails our leadership test, whatever that is, then the media just highlights the living daylights out of the poor person, when in fact, it's not completely the fault of the person that has failed in the eyes of the media, because that person had gotten out of the servant leadership model. They had gotten into a pure leadership model trying to give us what we wanted, and there was a good chance that wasn't who they were. And so inevitably in those situations, people always fall back on who they are. So it's interesting, given that most leaders typically are not servant leaders, although there is a growing interest in the servant leadership model, it's an interesting thing to think about when you ask the question, you know, how do we move to such a model? You know, if there is some greater thing, some greater result that can be obtained through a servant leadership model, you know, how can we move to that? You know, how do we convince others that that is a better model? And, you know, it's kind of interesting. If you think about the presidential race in the U.S., it rarely comes down to who actually is the best leader, because by the time the spin doctors and everyone else are through, it's very difficult to actually tell who is better. And, you know, we can debate it ad nauseum. But at the end of the day, both leaders are equally perfect based on what the spin doctors, the spin meisters, and folks have promoted. So how do we move to this new model? How do we find servant leaders and enable them to be in better positions of influence? And if we are leaders, how do we move towards the servant leadership model? And there's a good chance that that those on the call are probably exhibiting various behaviors of the servant leadership model. I know one person on the call in particular who exhibits that. And I'm sure people who are interested in servant leadership tend to be the ones who are already exhibiting some traits of servant leadership. So, you know, when you think about moving to the new model, if we choose to become servant leaders, what does that mean to us? You know, and the first thing is we need to recognize that servant leadership, as I said earlier, is not about our own power. It's not about our authority. You know, it's about influence. How can I influence someone else to achieve something for the greater good? And it's also about being able to, as I said earlier, to capture and articulate a vision. And this vision is something that is collectively defined. And while it's collectively embraced, the servant leader is the real torchbearer for it. And when everything starts to collapse around a project on occasion, it's the servant leader who's able to hold this vision close to everyone's heart and to help them move through all the noise and the challenges. The other thing we need to recognize is the servant leader model is often misunderstood by those who prefer the older models, the authoritarian models, you know, the power-based or position-based models. You know, so as we either grow ourselves towards servant leadership or we help others move towards a servant leadership model, it's really important that we be patient with ourselves and we be patient with others. You know, this transition to a servant leadership model doesn't happen overnight. And even as a servant leader gains skills and strengths in the servant leadership model, the results of that servant leader don't manifest overnight either. And I know some folks who have run out and bought the latest book by a John Maxwell or a Ken Blanchard or someone else, and they read the book and complain to me a month later that it's been a month and they're not seeing a result. And, you know, it takes a while to really have the true servant leadership model. And I would posit that if you expect results in a month, then there's probably still too much ego in the equation. And we'll talk about ego in a minute. But ego and servant leaders usually are not used in the same sentence. As I mentioned earlier, the world typically embraces a completely different model. There have been some great servant leaders in our history. I mean, think of Gandhi and people like that, people who served others. But overall, like for example, if you want to climb to the top of many organizations in the corporate world, or if you want to climb to the top in the political world, servant leaders tend to not get a whole lot of support. Occasionally, some do rise to the top, and there are some great examples. But most of us who have worked in the corporate world, and I worked on Wall Street for a lot of years, I didn't see a whole lot of servant leaders, and which is really unfortunate, because I believe if we had had more servant leaders on Wall Street, then we would not have had what we had last September, in September of 2008. So servant leaders, what's important as we move towards the servant leadership model is to recognize that each person, whether it be the servant leader or someone else, the persons that they will serve, bring unique gifts. And it's really important to embrace those gifts, to identify them and to embrace them. So we bring a unique combination of talent, knowledge, passion, and life context to the table. And what's really important is the servant leader, you know, explores these gifts first within themselves, and they establish a sense of purpose and a sense of legacy. You know, that whole concept of how will I be remembered when I'm gone? And that's not a question of ego. That's not to say, you know, how many statues will be raised in my honor. It's a question of establishing, you know, why we matter on the planet, you know, why it matters that we're here. We all matter, but few of us have actually taken the time to articulate to ourselves and to others why. Now, the servant leader has worked through that process, and the servant leader knows why they're here. And so they have that sense of purpose. And so by doing that, once you have a sense of purpose, you know, and then the servant leader looks for things to embrace with their sense of purpose. So if they've defined what they bring to this earth, then they look for ways to share that with others, to enable others. So, you know, so the servant leader will then look for projects or opportunities or what have you to express this purpose. So if you're incubating or you're developing your own skills as a servant leader, it's really important for you to understand why you matter and what your purpose is, what your calling is, because that's the thing you're going to be really passionate and uncompromising about. You're going to be uncompromising in quality. You're going to be uncompromising from the standpoint of how can we collaborate to make this place a better place. And so then the servant leader will then connect with other people who either have the same sense of purpose or will connect with them and help them develop their own sense of purpose. You know, the classic leadership model, the older leadership model, was more around the notion of, I don't want you to be empowered because I'm going to tell you what you need to do. And so if you're empowered, you're going to ask too many questions. And that's just going to make my life complicated. You know, as a servant leader, what we do is we look for ways to grow others. We look for ways to empower others, to help them build their strengths, build their talents, build their life context, and help them realize their own purpose. Now, you know, I've spoken to people about this in the past, and they say, oh, that's all nice, but in the end, you're sacrificing yourself for everyone else. And in fact, that's not true. What happens is this. When you realize what your purpose is, you will find ways to empower others while at the same time satisfying your own sense of purpose and fulfillment. And then as you do that, you will find you get great satisfaction out of being a servant leader because you are, in fact, doing the thing you like to do. And then you are empowering others to do the thing that they like to do. So, you know, when I've spoken to people about this in the past and they say, oh, if you just work to make everybody happy, blah, 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 then you're not satisfying your own need. In fact, that's not what a servant leader does. And as I said earlier, you know, a servant leader is not a doormat. They're not a martyr. But they do believe in driving their own purpose. And as they drive their own purpose, they get satisfaction out of serving others. And so there is no sense of sacrifice. The other thing that servant leaders do, servant leaders are very passionate, as I said earlier, and servant leaders love to connect with other passionate people. You know, and as we develop our servant leadership skills, one of the things we don't really want to do is associate, or not, I shouldn't say associate, one of the things we have to be careful of are people who are apathetic or indifferent, people who are disconnected. Now, it's true that servant leaders can help people who are apathetic or indifferent to become passionate. And a true servant leader will do that. But you have to be careful. You know, if you associate yourself, for example, if you go back to the power model, I know a lot of leaders personally on Wall Street and in other places prefer the apathetic employee. I mean, this to me is counter to common sense, but they prefer them because the apathetic or indifferent employee in their mind can be guided or directed or coerced. And in fact, The passionate team member or the passionate associate is someone who will actually empower the servant leader in turn, and collectively their respective passions drive each other to greater heights. Servant leaders, one of the things that's really important in the servant leadership model is the notion of credit and who gets it. A true servant leader is happy to give credit away. And a true servant leader doesn't keep credit to themselves. And, you know, it's a lot of leaders today, you know, they're quick to stand up and take awards and all that kind of stuff. And there are some humble people out there who will say, well, this was really due in part two, et cetera. But I've seen, and a lot of us have seen, a number of situations where leaders have received awards or acknowledgments, and they gratefully accepted it, and it felt all wonderful. But at the same time, you were never really given an opportunity to understand that the true leader didn't actually accomplish the result, and that the true leader, you know, the true leader created the vision, and the true leader empowered the team, but it was the team that empowered the result. And I remember in my company that I co-founded in New York in 99, we specialized in a very complex subject called human capital optimization. And we used a number of different techniques, including data development analysis, which are all nice, big, long syllable words. And we won a number of awards. And somebody said to me once, what do you attribute your success to? And so they were kind of suggesting it was my success. And my answer was, in fact, the only contribution I've had to the success is this. I brought together a great team. I helped incubate a vision, and I empowered the team with whatever tools they needed, and then I ran ahead of them to keep obstacles out of their way. But other than that, I can't take any credit at all, because it was the team that delivered. And, you know, it's kind of funny, in the New York world, in a lot of situations, it wasn't quite the answer the interviewers expected, because they expected me to talk about my grand vision for this and my grand vision for that, and, oh, I did this and I did that, but it wasn't like that at all. You know, and the true servant leader recognizes that the people they serve are the people that produce the result. So, you know, as we become servant leaders and we have opportunity to have influence over the people we serve. You know, I say to people, you know, as you become a servant leader and you become that person of influence, you know, feed your team with your vision and then nourish them with your support and empower them. And then, as I said, you run before them to remove obstacles. And then when you have opportunities, catch them doing something right. And, you know, too many people, including the media, love to catch people doing things wrong. But a true servant leader looks for ways to catch people doing something right. And then once they've done, once the team has actually created the desired result, then the true servant leader gives the credit away. And, you know, in the narcissistic world that we've developed into in some ways, you know, a lot of people say, well, if I give the credit away, then I'll never have an opportunity to leverage that and promote myself and do something else. And my philosophy has always been that when you give the credit away, appropriate rewards will come and opportunities to serve in a greater way will come. But if you focus on getting the reward or the accolades or the credit, that may be the last accolades you may ever receive. And the other thing, too, as we become servant leaders, the thing that's really, really important is to always allow your people, and not only allow, to empower your people to be better leaders than you are. And this is a great challenge in the leadership model, in the classic leadership models, because ego tends to get in the way of this. In a lot of organizations, as people within a team start to become empowered, occasionally you will find collisions of ego. Because the leader, the traditional leader, is saying, look, I'm the king and you're going to do what I tell you. But the team members have acquired quite a bit of skill themselves. And they have their own insights into things, and so you start to have collisions of ego. And so the true servant leader embraces the fact that his or her team will eventually become superior to the original servant leader, both in skills, in knowledge, and in servant leader capabilities. And so the greatest legacy a servant leader could ever leave would be to be able to point to a number of people who worked for them or with them and have become great servant leaders in their own right. You know, it's when you contrast classic leadership and servant leadership, I mean, many times it does come down to ego. And unfortunately, in the classic leadership model, ego ultimately is what determines how the leader executes, determines how they manage their teams. It determines how well they empower or not empower their team. It determines how they react when the team wins something. And, you know, it also determines how they act when something bad happens. Because, you know, the servant leader, when something bad happens, the servant leader rallies the crew and says, you know, we own this collectively. How can we figure this out? And many of us have experienced the classic leadership model where something explodes somewhere and the first thing they think of is who is to blame. I remember on Wall Street one time we had a system that had to run every day at 4 o'clock. And if it didn't run at 4 o'clock, we paid huge, huge fines. And one day this system stopped working at 3:30, and nobody knew why. But the first decision that the local leader within the organization made was, well, we need to call a meeting to see who messed up. And what was amazing about that is, I forget the magnitude of the fines, but it was somewhere around maybe $8 to $10 million. And, you know, a number of us said, well, can't you guys go have that meeting while the rest of us go figure out what went wrong? And they were shocked by that. They just kind of assumed the ego was so strong that they just assumed, you know, if we stop the world, you know, we can stop the world right now to figure out who messed up. And by the time we're done, then the world will just pick up and we can solve the problem. But see, whereas the servant leader recognizes that this is not a question of individual responsibility or blame, that the team lives and dies together. So, you know, when you think about becoming a servant leader, think about the key challenges and obstacles that you'll face. You know, of course, ego is a nasty thing that that we're all equipped with. It both empowers us and disempowers us. A lot of us who go through, depending on the culture you go through, depending on the schools you go through, depending on the life context in terms of vocation, you know, ego can play an enabler or disabler. I know on Wall Street, ego is everything, and, you know, posturing is everything. But the challenge is ego is like speed. Ego kills. And, you know, the true servant leader has learned how to diminish their ego such that they have enough, just a pinch, enough to give them the self-confidence they need. But that's it. And they have enough so that they can defend themselves and they're passionate and they can defend themselves when they need to. They're not a doormat or a martyr for anyone. But after that, the rest of the ego is non-existent and has to be non-existent. And that's a great challenge for many people because we're taught to be the best you can be requires considerable chutzpah. And, you know, for a lot of people, that translates into big egos. And, you know, you'll find that it is impossible to be a servant leader and have a large ego at the same time. The other thing, too, one of the other key challenges to becoming a good servant leader is to be yourself. We live in a society where it's easier and better a lot of times, or we think it's better to be someone else. Either we need to dress differently, think differently, express ourselves differently. And, you know, when you go back, you trace your way back to high school, for example, and you're thinking about your vocation, and people say, you should be like so-and-so or so-and-so, and somebody names the attributes you should be like. And then we come up through the system, and, for example, if you're on Wall Street, you wear a certain color tie, and you wear a certain color shirt, and you wear a certain color suit. And so you become like everyone else. But then once you become like everyone else, you know, if you decide that you have a passion to serve and the people around you don't, then you have a challenge to overcome, and that is, you know, how badly do you want to serve and are you willing to be different? Servant leaders, of course, require a lot of courage and a lot of perseverance. And I wrote a blog last week about entrepreneurs. And, you know, I said in my blog that sometimes being an entrepreneur is a lonely place. And, you know, to be a servant leader sometimes is a lonely place as well. And for the most part, a good servant leader with a good team will always feel the love and the respect of the team. But, you know, there are going to be times when the servant leader has to defend the actions of the team. And, you know, sometimes it takes a lot of courage for a servant leader who's using one particular model to stand in front of a lot of superiors who don't embrace that model. And so, you know, the true servant leader will stand up and defend themselves against some pretty incredible odds sometimes. One of the things I found very important over the years from a servant leadership perspective is to find enlightened mentors. And I've been really blessed over the years with some phenomenal mentors who were incredibly gentle in their approach, but incredibly strong and persistent at the same time. And these mentors were able to prove to me over the years that you can get very far in life without being the bully or the intimidator that a lot of leadership folks like to be, especially the people who follow the classic leadership model. Mentors keep you honest. They keep you accountable, and they lead by example. You know, and like I said, I've been blessed by many. I know you folks on the call have probably had some great ones as well. The more you can find and surround yourself with, the better. You know, the other thing, too, about servant leaders is that servant leaders are honest and gentle with themselves. And, you know, one of the obstacles that I that I help people overcome is the notion of people being too hard on themselves and the notion that they're too impatient with themselves, or if they make a mistake, they beat themselves up too much. And, you know, the true servant leader is honest and gentle with themselves from the standpoint of they acknowledge, because their ego has been pushed down in size and strength, they acknowledge that they're human and humans make mistakes. If my ego, for example, were to get too large and I would expect too much of myself, chances are I'd expect too much of you if you were on my team. And so, you know, it's a great lesson. In order to be able to treat other people with the appropriate level of respect and honesty and dignity when people do things right and when they do things wrong, the best place to start practicing that is on yourself. And if you can't master it within yourself, you won't be able to master it helping other people either. You know, people who are servant leaders, as I mentioned earlier, have a clear understanding of their purpose. They have a clear understanding of what they want their legacy to be. You know, they have a clear understanding of why it matters that they're here. And, you know, the servant leader not only has a clear understanding of that, but they like their teams to have that same understanding. And when you can ignite someone's purpose and their passion, and you can serve them and help them bring their gifts to the table, their strengths, their knowledge, their talents, you know, then you have created an empowered team, and that is the ultimate purpose of the servant leader. The other thing, too, is, you know, servant leadership isn't something you can turn on and turn off. You know, you have to want it and live it when nobody's watching. And, you know, that is the true test of an authentic servant leader. It's the person who does the right thing even when nobody knows what you've done or what the result is. But you've done the right thing. And if you can do the right things when no one is watching, then when it comes time to doing it in front of the scrutiny of others, then you will do it by second nature. The other important thing about a servant leader is a servant leader loves the person that they are. And like as I said earlier, they accept the good and the bad and everything in between that they are. They cherish their gifts. They focus on growing their gifts. They acknowledge their weaknesses, and they do what they can, but they're strengths-focused and they're not weakness-focused. You know, if you think back to Tiger Woods, for example, Tiger Woods, when he first came onto the golf scene, had a great driving game, but he had a lousy putting game. And he recognized that he could put a lot of effort into becoming a great putter, but then he would only become a lackluster driver. And so his game would pick up on one end, would fail on the other end, and he'd probably be worse off. So he put enough into his putting game to become better so that the putting game didn't cripple him, but he still focused on his driving game. And, you know, servant leaders are strengths-focused from that perspective. And I guess the other thing that I would suggest, you know, one of the great challenges to becoming a servant leader, one of the great obstacles, is to have a sense of humor about things. Very few decisions in our lives are as life and death as we portray them to be. And, you know, a true servant leader, when things explode, the true servant leader doesn't lose it. They don't lose their composure. They don't make people afraid. They don't intimidate. You know, that's not to say they'll start cracking jokes and all the rest of it, but they have a different sense about them in terms of, you know, how significant is this challenge in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, if you can't approach it a little less seriously from the standpoint of it's not the end to have a bad situation. In fact, many times when you look back on it, you may actually find something humorous in many situations. Then, you know, it makes your life as a servant leader just a whole lot easier. You know, it's been said that the game of life is the game where no one gets out alive anyway. So when you look at that context, most of the things, and there are some occupations that are exempt from that, of course, but most things aren't as dramatic as people would love you to believe that they are. And the true servant leader is steady. The true servant leader is able to demonstrate to his or her team that whatever it is will be addressed, but it's not serious enough to panic over it. It's not serious enough to lose composure over it. And at the end of the day, the team will be better off. We'll have grown from the experience and will actually have flourished at a time when some people probably expected them to perish. And so, I mean, that's my thoughts on servant leadership. I'd love to have your thoughts on servant leadership, your thoughts on where you are in the servant leadership process, and your thoughts on perhaps where society could make better use of servant leadership. So I'm going to throw it open to you guys for any questions or observations or comments that you might have.
Well, that's a lot to chew on.
Well, I had to compress it in an hour. I usually do this talk in a day.
That's not what I have to say about that. That's a lot to think about. Good points, Harry. Like I said, you've given me a lot to think about. And you already know some of my feelings, so it fits right in with my lifestyle and where I'm headed. But I think a little more leadership is what I need to exhibit at this point. And so it's interesting. Food for thought.
Cool. Suzanne?
Yes. Hi, Harry. I was, you know, that was my reaction, too, is that, wow. It was, you know, thank you. This has been really, really good and very enlightening, and it is definitely something that you really want to give a lot of thought to. You know, lots of things I, you know, related to you right away, and other things I thought, wow, I need to really think about that. And this is deep thinking. I appreciate, you know, the value of this class and what you've shared, because really it is definitely very thought-provoking, and I think that people who really do want to step into their own leadership with whatever it is that they're passionate about and you know, whatever they want their life to be about, need to give this some, you know, deep thought. And I think that people who are in already in a servant leadership role to whatever degree they are in have already pondered a lot of these things and, you know, are stepping into that role and you know, possessing some of those leadership qualities. But you definitely have a huge scope that you've introduced to us, and I appreciate it. I want to give it a lot more thought. And I think it will help me to, you know, take where I'm at to the next level. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you for your participation. You know, I guess for me, in my early days on Wall Street, I had what I consider to be, or I worked for, classic leaders. And, you know, I had some classic leaders who were good people in themselves. I'm not criticizing who they are, but they acquired their leadership skills from other classic leaders. And, again, they worked through pure delegation. They didn't care so much about the people as what got accomplished. They didn't think about, you know, how can I grow my team? How can we collaborate on vision? You know, so they weren't thinking about their team and the result, because they're not mutually exclusive. They thought about the result. And when you get focused on the result, it changes how you interact with the team, because you tend to forget about team per se. And when you're focused on the result, if the result is not manifesting, then the classic leader starts to pick apart the team. And they bully them or intimidate them or threaten them or swap some out and swap others in, because they forget about the importance of team dynamics and team cohesiveness. And they just figure, well, the team members are just commodities, and I don't care about the team, and I'll just swap them in and out. But I was blessed, as I made my way through Wall Street and started my own company and that sort of thing, I was really blessed, and I'm eternally grateful for a lot of people who came into my life to help me see that you can be successful and be a real servant leader. And you know, you can embrace the accomplishments and the growth of the team, and you can help people develop their own sense of fulfillment and purpose while still advancing the objectives of the team. And I remember I had one mentor who passed away a couple of years ago from brain cancer. And someone once said to me, they said, show me one example of a guy who lives a servant leadership model and is not a doormat, and show me an example of a servant leader who actually has made it in business with a servant leadership approach. And I pointed to this guy, and I said, you know, this guy keeps a couple of Ferraris in his garage and all that stuff. So if you're trying to establish the measure of a leader as by what he owns, well, he owns all of that stuff. But at the same time, anyone who has ever worked with him will tell you that they were the best days of their life because he helped us grow as individuals, as leaders. I mean, he was totally unselfish. And that's, you know, the true servant leader, as I said earlier, asks the question, how can I use the gifts that I have to enable the gifts in others to achieve the desired result? And, you know, the servant leaders, those are the people that you look back on years later and you realize the impact that they had on your life, professionally and personally. And you look back and you realize, you know what? Those were the opportunities for greatest growth and greatest satisfaction in my life. And, you know, if you have the opportunity as a servant leader to leave that legacy to others, then that's a pretty good feeling that you have for yourself, and it's a great legacy to leave. You know, that notion of we all want to be remembered when we're gone. Not that we want statues erected or plaques and all that kind of stuff. But it matters to everyone, regardless of what people will say, it matters that people remember that we were here. And, you know, the servant leadership model, I think, is a great way, you know, that legacy of, you know, the things that we do well as servant leaders impact seven generations out versus the things we do as a classic leader impact seven generations out in a different way. And we have a choice, and we can choose the servant leadership model or the classic leadership model, and, you know, so, and we can have a choice as to the legacy that we leave to others. And, you know, I mentioned Ken Blanchard earlier. I mean, Ken Blanchard, if you're ever blessed with the opportunity to meet the man, he is the most, I mean, business-wise, I find him brilliant. And yet, when you speak to Ken, if you compliment Ken on his brilliance, he is the most humble man. He's not a doormat. He knows what he wants. He knows what he is good at. But man, when you interact with Ken or with anyone like Ken, I mean, it's the type of interaction that at the end of the day, you have learned something and you feel really good about it. And that's a great legacy of a servant leader.
Harry, this is Peter again, and I want to thank you so much for this wonderful presentation. I'm going to have to re-listen to it myself a number of times. For the benefit of those people that will be listening in the future, are there some ways that people can learn more about you and what you do and your activities?
Sure, and thank you for that, Peter. The best way to find out about what I do is from my website, www.harrytucker.com, one word, harrytucker.com. You'll find a blurb about what I do and that kind of stuff. People may be interested in my blog as well, which you could reach from that website. I blog about authenticity and leadership, and I'm quite passionate about that. My blog draws quite a number of readers. I blogged about authenticity the other day, and when I got up the next morning, I wrote it at midnight. I had 675 emails in my inbox the next morning asking me about it. So I'm very passionate about that. The other thing that people might be interested in, Peter, is in February or March, we're still working on the logistics, myself and two associates are going on a quest for authenticity. And tentatively, we're traveling to about 25 cities in the U.S. and in Canada. And we're going to engage, it's not a presentation, we're going to engage in a sharing, an active dialogue with people in each of these cities around what is authenticity to you. And that's going to cover leadership. It's going to cover whatever the people of each city believe is an appropriate subject for discussing authenticity. So details of that tour, as we get ready to do that tour, details of that tour will be posted on my website as well.
We'll be sure to follow up on that and make sure that we get it onto the Just About Perfect website as an upcoming activity for next year. Thanks again so much.
Peter, I really appreciate this opportunity today.
Well, it's been special for us too, so thank you for all your sharing.
Thank you, and thank you all. I'm sorry, Peter?
We're both saying the same thing, and thanks for all the other people that joined us on the call and for the ones that will get to listen to it in the future.
I appreciate that. I wish everyone a wonderful day.
Thank you, Harry.
Take
Thank
care.
You.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Night.